you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
Hi, I'm Jordan Harbour. Thank you for tuning into the Twilight Histories. What you're about to hear is part 3 of May His Ka Endure Forever by Kevin Valpanese. I won't give anything away, but I have to tell you, the way Kevin built this show and how he ended it, I think this just may be my favorite thing he's done so far. If you have a business, just have it at the back of your mind as you listen to today's show that Kevin can get you set up with a podcast of your own on iTunes. Go check out his website, baroquemedia.com, for more details. I'd like to give a quick shout-out to our latest patrons. A huge thank you to Brooke Tyler, Gary Sheldon, Ake Adima, and CL11B. You guys are making the Twilight Histories possible. You're helping us expand with great world creators like Kevin Valpanese. Thank you. Now please, enjoy today's show. May His Ka Endure Forever, Part 3, by Kevin Valpanese.
Newt, the embodiment of the unending void in its star-speckled majesty, stretches out in every direction, embracing Earth and giving comfort to the lonely soul laying half-buried in the cold desert sand. As you trace the undulating belts of light across the vastness, you wonder whether the sight is any more breathtaking in any of the infinite permutations of this world. Could you spend an eternity plunging through time and always find a night sky more beautiful than the last? A cold breeze kicks sand up into your eyes. You writhe about, suddenly conscious of your grainy fetters. You pull yourself out from the ground and stand tall, rubbing your eyes. You peer out across the desert, unable to fix your agitated eyes on any definite form. The ground shakes, and you nearly fall onto your face. You scramble and get back to your feet as the ground continues to rumble. You thrust one hand out in front of you as you continue to wipe your eyes with the other. You stumble about here and there, unable to find any respite from the tremors. Sand explodes upward, flying high into the air like a gritty fountain. You leap out of the way of another explosion and land face first in the sand, your mouth filling with millions of tiny particles. You spit out the gritty contents of your mouth and pull yourself out from under the deluge of sand. Your eyes finally recover, and you can see that the sand is indeed erupting without pause. Huge heaps of the stuff grow into dunes with impossible speed and spread out, threatening to sweep you away in a sandy tsunami. You spin around and run for it, trying to weave your way between the dusty peaks rising up all around you. Another geyser of sand erupts in front of you, sending you flying onto your back. As you recover and look up to confront this latest threat, your gaze is returned by the sneering stone visage of the long-dead Pharaoh. The head of this colossus rises from the sand as if to taste the fresh air for the first time in centuries. And soon, his shoulders, his chest, his waist, everything rises up above the sand. The thing surpasses even the wildest dreams of the Rhodians. The Pharaoh towers over you, growing larger every moment, threatening to reach out and snatch the very stars from the sky. But then, his rigid stance becomes fluid, and as the royal golem comes to life, he doesn't turn his empty eyes skyward. He casts them down at the mere mortal scrambling at his feet. You turn again and attempt to flee, glancing over your shoulder to see the Pharaoh's massive hand reaching out to snatch you. His obsidian fingers close around you, plunging you into darkness as you're entombed in his merciless grasp. The sound of rushing water carries you back to consciousness. Your eyes crack open, and an intense orange glow assaults them. You recoil, bringing your hands up to your eyes. You realize that your hands are bound, secured by rough rope. Your wrists are shredded, the skin torn up by the merciless fibers of the rope. You move your legs, and a relief to find that at least they are not bound.
"Welcome back to the realm of the living, thief."
A coarse voice draws your attention. You sit up and rub your eyes. Your vision solidifies, and you find the grotesque, sneering face of the high priest in front of yours. The man stands tall and strolls around, his hands folded behind his back, and his eyes cast up in deep reflection. Taking a moment to survey your surroundings, you find that while you might not be underground, you're definitely not outside. You're on a high platform overlooking a vast chamber. Large cauldrons spread about the chamber burn, their flames illuminating everything. Large torrents of water gush down from apertures in the four walls, the deluge cascading down into a man-made lake, from which four streams emerge and flow into yet more apertures leading God knows where. Around the lake and the rivers, you see a facsimile of a city, replete with homes, temples, and raised bridges arching across the water. You also notice a central island, carved in obsidian, unlike the sandstone structures which comprise the city. The central island features a small temple, its vast roof held up by columns fashioned in the likeness of the pharaoh. From your vantage point, you spy a single entrance to the temple, before which is a small pier. But the surging water doubtless makes any approach to the temple impossible. Unfortunately, you can't spare much time to ponder that mystery. You're struck on the back and kicked onto your belly. You roll over and get a sandaled foot pressed onto your chest for your troubles. A pair of Egyptian soldiers stand over you, one of them leaning into you with all the weight of his muscular form and the iron-scaled armor he wears.
"You know," the high priest begins, "I've been struggling to place where exactly you hail from. I thought perhaps that you were from our western dominions, or perhaps from the mountains north of Urartu. But nothing feels right. No, you come from much further afield, my friend."
"What difference does it make where I'm from? Just tell me what you want."
"See, even your manner of speaking, it's so... one struggles to find the words."
The high priest continues to pace about, placing a hand girded with golden rings against his angular chin.
"As to what I want, that's quite simple. I want to know who compelled you to disturb the resting place of our beloved king."
"Oh, please. You expect me to believe that this is a tomb? Look around. You've built a nice little slice of paradise down here at the expense of your subjects. I've been through I don't know how many chambers, and all of them do no good for a withering corpse in a box. The high priest signals to the two soldiers. They heave you up and hold you before the man. The high priest strikes you with his hand, his rings either adding to the blunt trauma or scraping your face with their inset jewels. The soldiers seize your head and force you to look forward as the high priest strikes you again. You spit blood and wince as more of the red stuff drips down from a cut in your left brow and into your eye.
There is no splendor of which our first and greatest king is undeserving. And it is his enduring generosity which grants us, his humble servants, but a taste of what his Ka delights in beyond this realm.
And there it is. Priest or politician, you're all the same. I bet the old king would have you all buried alive if he knew how you were drinking and pissing away Egypt's fortune down here. The high priest's lips curl into an even more malevolent grin. His jaundiced teeth glimmer in the dancing light of the burning cauldrons.
Then come and enlighten him yourself.
You stand at the shore of the great indoor lake, your hands still securely fastened together in front of you. Under the watchful eyes of the guards, you had no good chance to pick at the knots. Still, you look around, hoping that an opportunity may present itself. What you do notice is that this region of the underground complex is fairly populated. There are dozens of servants down here, all rushing about with food, wine, oil, and other delights of the ancient Near East. There are even laborers down here, carving sandstone blocks and piling them up near the water's edge. And there's a garrison's worth of soldiers here, all keeping an eye on the workers. The movement of the high priest's hands draws your gaze. He waves them at several laborers standing next to what appears to be a giant corkscrew sticking out of the ground. On cue, the men take hold of shafts emerging from the central spine of the screw and begin to turn the thing in a clockwise motion. You look up at one of the apertures from which a raging torrent of water erupts. Two stone discs, one offset from the other, emerge from the walls within the aperture and stem the flow of water until it's completely cut off. The water in the lake settles, its choppiness giving way to utter tranquility.
"Oh," begins the priest, "I hope you don't mind, but I'm going to insist that another guest joins us. Hopefully the boat won't be too cramped."
The high priest signals again. Two laborers rush into a large building with a gaping entrance. Moments later, 10 laborers emerge, dragging a small boat out toward the water's edge. Among the laborers, you spot Memnon, his face a red-purple mess, one eye swollen shut. With his good eye, he notices you and glances away.
"Oh, don't trouble yourself. I know it was you who let this foreigner inside."
The laborers slide the boat down a ramp and into the water. Several of them wade into the lake, waist deep, and drag the boat over to the dock. Memnon is seized by one of the soldiers. His hands are bound, and he's led over to you. "For what it's worth, Memnon, I'm sorry." You can't think of anything else to say. Memnon won't even look at you. And can you blame him? Two soldiers seize you and force you onto the waiting boat. Then they seat Memnon next to you. The high priest gets on board, in the company of the two soldiers.
"Send word for the barge. We won't be long."
Several attendants bow out and rush off. The soldiers in the boat take hold of long wooden paddles and set the boat in motion. The high priest relaxes as the boat glides across the still face of the water. You eye the soldiers, taking notice of the daggers each man has hanging from his belt. Now's not the time, but at least you've got something to work with.
I told you no good would come of this.
Memnon's voice is rough, his breathing labored. You notice blood still trickling out from a cut above his right brow.
Both our lives are forfeit now. Were they worth whatever damned treasure you hope to find down here? Your lives do not even measure up to the worth of a single stone in this sacred place. Certainly, your trespassing has been an unwelcome interruption. But I can hardly deny that a desperate or a greedy man would take so foolish a risk.
The high priest sneers, shakes his head.
Take solace in knowing that your deaths were at least in pursuit of something.
You reach the central island and are forced onto the pier by the tip of a sword. One of the soldiers ties the boat to a wooden pole, making little effort with the knot. The high priest rubs his hand together and licks his lips as he sets his eyes on the polished obsidian of the temple. The touch of a sword sends you marching forward, the high priest leading the way. You try to pick at the knot binding your hands, but to no avail. Then, you cast your gaze upon the double doors which guard the entrance to the temple. There's a curious scene depicting a swirling vortex, which takes pride of place in the relief work, its central point aligned with the crease between the doors. On either door, the pharaoh appears. On the left door, he stands tall, wearing the dual crown of Egypt, his hands raised in exaltation. On the right door, pharaoh appears in curious armor, unlike anything you've seen in this or any other version of Egypt you've traveled to. Again, his hands are raised in exaltation. Both likenesses of the pharaoh face the heart of the vortex. The two soldiers jog ahead and seize levers on either side of the door. They push the levers down, and soon the doors groan and part, opening up to welcome you into what is likely to become your tomb. The interior of the temple is black, blacker than the stone, blacker even than the material darkness you encountered earlier in your journey. No, this darkness is absolute. Your heart sinks and your skin tightens. You feel a cold shock clamber up your spine like the half-dead hand of some ghoul. Memnon lowers his gaze from the temple and begins to mutter to himself. You catch a word here and there. He's praying to the gods for protection, but just as quickly as he started, he stops, finishing mid-sentence. Perhaps he realizes that the gods, if they truly exist, won't be coming to your aid anytime soon. The high priest steps forward, and without pause, ventures into the darkness, vanishing from sight in an instant. But even though you can no longer see him, you can hear the patter of his sandals against the polished stone floor. You can hear his short, excited breaths. And then, you hear a clanging of metal. A bright light erupts from within the temple, illuminating the interior. You look away, trying to avoid being blinded for the third or fourth time today. But even with your eyelids squeezed together, the light penetrates through, its sickly blue-green hue silhouetting the blood vessels in your eyes. As the intensity of the glow dies down, you finally open your eyes. Now the interior of the temple is illuminated, its forest of columns and central altar all clear as day. Looking further inside, you spy a sarcophagus stood upright on a raised platform, a capstone to a miniature step pyramid. The high priest stands before the altar, his hands resting on a small pyramid set in the center of the altar. The soldiers urge you forward, and with heavy feet, you enter the temple, unsure of what the high priest means to do to you. Perhaps he'll slit your throats and empty your blood over the altar. Perhaps you'll be strangled and left to rot at the foot of the sarcophagus. Whatever he has planned, it's going to happen soon, which means your window to escape is closing. If those great stone doors close behind you, that'll certainly be the end of you.
Stranger, do you know the secrets of this land? Do you know of what awaits the Ka upon its departure from our mortal flesh? For some, it is life eternal in the field of reeds, where you can wander further than the horizon, and always find comfort in good food, drink, and the company of other worthy souls. For others, whom the gods deem unfit, there is no world beyond, only oblivion.
The high priest ascends the step pyramid, approaching the sarcophagus. You see that the sarcophagus is made of gold and lavishly decorated. But looking closely, you see that instead of hieroglyphics, there appear to be circuits forming complex designs on the surface. And instead of jewels set into the gold, there are glass bulbs. Looking even closer, you see that there is a faint glow emerging from the crease between the lid and the case.
Our first king came to us from the field of reeds and told the ancestors of our priesthood about the wonders of the world beyond. He made this land cherished and feared among all the kingdoms of the earth. And when his work was done, he told his loyal followers that he had to return to the field of reeds. He ordered a temple built to guard the way, this temple. And when the time came, he stepped into the sarcophagus and crossed back into paradise, promising to one day return.
You laugh, unable to indulge this wretched fool in his superstitious ramblings any longer. Oh, please. We both know that your people took that promise and ran with it. You convinced the whole country to keep building out this pleasure bunker of yours over the centuries. Why don't you bring the people down here and show them the truth? Show them the wretched corpse in that box, if it hasn't already turned to dust. The high priest's grin is wide and toothy. He turns back toward the sarcophagus and, with a flourish, places his hands on the crook and flail held tight by the pharaoh's visage. The light from within the sarcophagus intensifies, rays erupt from within, and the bulbs on the lid flare to life. The air in the temple becomes charged, the hair on your arms stands straight up. You taste copper. You are nearly overcome by the sight of the sarcophagus in all its radiance. But rather than submit to the awe-inspiring spectacle before you, you seize upon the moment. Spinning on your heels, you turn and dive at the soldier behind you, tackling him to the ground. You headbutt the man, smashing his nose, and then pull the dagger from his belt. A powerful arm wraps itself around your throat, and you're pulled onto your feet. The other soldier has you in his grasp, squeezing with every fiber of muscle and sinew. You kick and swing your bound arms, trying to strike him with the knife, but to no avail. Then the man's grip loosens. You fall forward, roll over, and find Memnon with his bound hands wrapped around the soldier's throat. Not wanting to waste a good opportunity, you rush forward and plunge the dagger into the soldier's throat, killing him instantly. The other soldier gets to his feet and draws his sword. He approaches you, blade at the ready. You try to ward him off with a dagger, but with your hands still bound, that's a tall order. Then, the soldier backs off. Memnon joins you, now wielding the dead soldier's sword. You both advance, closing in on the soldier. Not wanting to waste time, you rush in, clashing blades with the enemy. You press him against a column and struggle to keep him pinned there. Memnon rushes up from the side and slits the man's throat. The soldier's lifeless body crumples to the floor. You and Memnon quickly cut each other's bonds. You turn to the high priest, who is so consumed in the ongoing light show that he's totally unaware of the blood you just spilled on hallowed ground. He kneels in front of the sarcophagus, eyes cast down. You relish the opportunity to finish him quickly. But before you can make your approach, the sarcophagus gives forth a blinding surge of light. Your eyes are on fire, and you collapse onto your back. You roll around on the stone floor, struggling against the searing pain. You can hear Memnon writhing and crying out next to you. Your moans and cries echo in the chamber. But fortunately, your blindness is brief. The pain quickly subsides, and you're able to see clearly again. You turn your attention back to the high priest before the sarcophagus, intent on finishing your bloody business before making good your escape. The high priest is stepping down, away from the sarcophagus. He takes his place at the altar, extending his arms out to you in exaltation.
You dare spill blood here? Oh, how quickly we will send you into the depths of oblivion.
I'm gonna cut your throat and stuff you in that box with your precious king. You tighten your grip on the dagger and step forward, but a loud peal of metal from within the sarcophagus gives you pause.
Look, unworthy wretches. Look upon the great king of Egypt. Look upon your doom.
And with those words, the sarcophagus opens, its lid sliding away to reveal its impossible contents. The pharaoh is in the box. Of this there is no doubt. But his condition violates all the known laws of nature. The man stands there on his own 2 feet, not embalmed or mummified. He wears fine azure armor, fashioned in a curious manner, and laden with blinking lights, buttons, and tubing. He wears a helmet on his head, fashioned in the style of the dual crown of Egypt, but with a visor to shield his face. He steps forward, emerging from the sarcophagus. The pharaoh reaches up and removes his helmet, revealing the face of a middle-aged man of vaguely Middle Eastern descent. His eyes are green, fierce, and knowing. He tucks his helmet under his arm like a biker would, and looks over to you. That's not possible. You can barely utter the words. You stumble back, almost dropping your dagger. You're not. You can't be. The pharaoh smiles. He descends the step pyramid and walks around the altar, giving the faintest nod to the high priest. The pharaoh approaches you, untroubled by the blades you and Memnon point at him. He gives you a once-over and chuckles to himself. "What's so funny?" you demand. The pharaoh shakes his head, placing his hands on his hips. He can barely contain his excitement. He looks you right in the eyes, grinning like a man who just won the lottery. So, where and when exactly are you from?
Wow, what a great ending, and what a great cliffhanger. Don't you just want to hear the next one? That was May His Ka Endure Forever, Part 3, by Kevin Valbonesi, and you can find Kevin at baroquemedia.com. I found a really cool podcast, and I want to recommend it to you. We'll get to that in a second, but first, just a quick update about our Patreon milestones. We are currently sitting at 107 patrons. When we hit 150, we'll be able to increase the number of professional shows like the one you just heard today to the tune of 3 each month. We are getting closer. If you want to support the Twilight Histories and help us expand this podcast, please go to twilighthistories.com or patreon.com and run a search for Twilight Histories. You will get instant access to over 40 shows only available to patrons. And now for that podcast recommendation. The show I think you should check out next is called Dark Histories, and it's really well done. Not only do I love the subject matter, but I think Ben has a great voice for it. Have a listen.
Hi everyone, my name's Ben. I'm the host of the Dark Histories podcast. I'm a huge fan of an unsolved mystery, true crime, and the fringe, strange, and more out there aspects of our social history. Each episode of Dark Histories focuses on a different subject, from a peculiar poisoning in Victorian England to the role of vampires in fiction and folklore. You can find the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or anywhere else you might get your podcast from, or just head over to darkhistories.com for all the subscription links and details about the show. I hope to have you join us soon. Cheers.
That was the Dark Histories podcast. Go check it out. I'm Jordan Harbour. Thanks for listening to the Twilight Histories. Till next time, take care.